It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Your Friday night. What a night in Chicago. So let's reload this week's news, which has been dominated heavily by a certain sport and a certain side of town, of course. But this is what we do every Friday. We have on the air. Obviously, the Blackhawks play a lot on Friday nights. So we haven't been on. But we break down the week that was, but not sort of in a way that's just like a round table talking about the stories, but in categories. Winners, the winners and losers, the biggest story, overreported, underreported. What story took you down the rabbit hole, and which story will be remembered in 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, 100, 500 years from now? I have a feeling that one applies tonight. In studio with me, I'm very excited. Two great radio people as well as friends of mine. Amy Guth, great to see you, Amy. How are you?
Great to see you. Always a pleasure
Amy,
to join you.
Amy, of course, hosts the Business Lunch and the Saturday Night Special, both on Saturdays here on 720 WGN. She also is a filmmaker, and she has the podcast with Rex Hupke, which is going well. So thanks for... What do you call that podcast?
We call it Guth and Hupke on Politics, because everything else we came up with was like an unpublishable pun or something. So we just decided, well, let's just call it exactly what it is. And then the like headline convention we use, it's always the worst, or the worst election ever, the worst debate ever, the worst whatever. It's always the worst something ever.
There you go. Also joining us, Scott Smith. Scott Smith, good to see you, our media contributor here on The Download. And also you can find him at Our Man in Chicago on Twitter, Facebook, Friendster.
Friendster, yeah. You're still trying to keep that going. You're still flogging that, yeah. Still got my top eight.
That's right. All right, so let's get to it. Let's talk about the biggest story of the week. I mean, I don't think that, you know, as we share our stories before, you know, obviously the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series, it's kind of strange to say. When you say it out loud, it's like, yeah, I guess that would be the biggest story of the week.
Yeah, you're sort of walking around in a little bit of a dream state. I think everybody kind of is, right? You know, you're used to seeing the rallies now at this point. We've got the Blackhawks, you know, a lot of people, not as many as you'd like, but a lot of people remember the White Sox in 2005, you know. So a downtown rally in Grand Park is not an unusual sight. And yet seeing the aerial shots with seas of blue, that Cubby blue is something that's in fact unusual, and I think seeing the CTA and the Metro as jammed as it was, I don't remember that happening for any of the Blackhawks rallies. So we definitely had some folks from Schaumburg who hadn't seen the city in a while, so that was nice.
And hadn't got the inside of a train station for a little bit,
too.
I mean, obviously the Cubs be the story, but as we talk about what, I mean, maybe we talk about, you know, the Cubs being the story, but what was the part of this Cubs story that grabbed you guys? What was it this week? What's it, when we talk about sort of the bonus round, what was it, the side stories about the Chicago Cubs that you found interesting?
Well, I loved all of the stories of, you know, oh, you know, so-and-so's grandfather was doing this last time they were in the World Series and a lot of that. And I thought it was very touching and cool how a lot of people were then going to Wrigley after the win to put like a memorial, like as if to let a loved one know, we finally got there. I know you didn't live to see it. You know, I mean, someone
they
I follow.
The whole wall, they put the chalk on,
on
the wall.
I mean,
that's crazy.
Somebody I'm connected to on social media, you know, lost his mom just in the last couple of years and went and wrote like, Mom, we did it. And, you know, someone else I know, her fiance died. And she was at the Sunday night game and, you know, and like, and it, there was just so much meaning for so many people and it was just so touching. And I thought that was very sweet. I also really loved, I was there, I was about a block north of the field outside when it happened. And it was really exciting energy to see. It was cool to see so many people so excited. And I really loved when it happened, I shot some video and started sprinting north on Clark Street to get out of there. Cause I got my video, I did my quick little bit. I'm out, and I had to be up really early the next morning. So I am like sprinting north on Clark Street towards Montrose and everyone is running. I mean, they moved the police barricade. So like
people
are just
at you?
Running at me. I felt like a salmon swimming upstream or something.
Weird.
And I pulled over at one point to get a little more video. And a guy just like, as soon as I hold my phone up, a guy just like hits the back of it and it hits me in the face. So a cop's in front of me. He's like, go shoot your thing. Go, 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 go. So I like shoot this video really quick. And I put it on Instagram. Keep running, keep running. And I finally got to a cab. It was actually very easy to get a cab up there because they were dropping everyone off right there.
Okay.
And I end up going like, just, I was like, get to Western Avenue and just go south, right? Because I, you know, a few miles away. And, but I was like, get as far west as you can. Like, we were going to get stuck otherwise. And all down, up and down Western Avenue, people were like, one guy had a grill. He pulled out into the median, into the turn lane, just to like blow stuff up inside the grill and shoot it off. And somebody
fireworks,
had like,
yeah,
like paint cans, and he took his shirt off and lit it on fire just so it was burning. And it was just, it was funny because it was just this unbridled joy. And then I wake up at like 3:30 in the morning. My neighbor was outside blowing things up in his alley and singing Go Cubs Go. And it was funny. And I know a lot of people were kind of irritated by it, but I thought it was lovely just to see the whole city kind of alight.
A lot of hand high fives with strangers, things
absolutely
of that.
I know, I think I saw somebody tweet something like, I have high fived exactly 217 strangers in the last
it was nice to see like an actual joyful celebration. I think a lot of people were worried, like, you know, what happens if the Cubs eventually win the World Series,
right,
the city is going to blow up, and this and that, and it didn't happen.
No,
you know, largely a couple, I think they took down a light pole and were running around with live wires that night, but other than that, you know, it was nice to see. I don't know, I don't necessarily buy the whole idea that the whole city comes together. I mean,
right,
as
there's
much
two,
as
yeah,
this is
teams,
a Cubs
right
town,
two teams, yeah,
I don't necessarily think that that necessarily happens. But a thing, an underdog story, a right story that this has finally happened, you know, I think even White Sox fans are maybe have some measure of relief that, oh, good, now we can stop talking about the next time they're going to win the World Series.
Yeah.
I think that's
my favorite thing. My favorite thing on Wednesday night, we got done here. You know, we were on for post game. It was so thrilling to be a part of that broadcast and everything here on WGN. And I walked down Hubbard Street. You'd like that, Amy. And walked past
the gauntlet there.
Yep, exactly.
Nice.
Walked through, and they had, you know, I get angry because I'd like my celebrations to be on the sidewalk. But for whatever reason, they have to let the streets open on Hubbard because everyone who's in a bar, like who's in Rockets, like, oh, I'm going to go outside. I'm going to walk on the street. But I got to the corner, and this guy comes up out of nowhere. I was getting in a cab, and he goes, hey, man, we did it. And I put my hand up. I'm kind of dressed up because I was on the air, and he, you know, we high five, and he goes, yeah. And he goes, you don't care.
He wanted a hug.
He wanted a drunken hug. Why are you not drunk? What is this? So that was my experience. Amy Guth, Scott Smith in studio. We're breaking down the week that was. We'll come back. We'll do winners and losers and overreported and underreported. Maybe get a little bit off this sort of Cubby train for a little bit here on the Download 720. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, we're breaking down the week that was. We're reloading this week's news with Scott Smith and Amy Guth. We all agree, okay? We get it out of the way. We all agree the Cubs are the biggest story of all time. That is done. All right. Good?
Stipulated.
So stipulated.
All right, let's talk about winners and losers. Obviously, you could get very literal with your choice for winners. The Chicago Cubs, right?
Right.
But let's talk about winners. Who do you say in your eyes is a winner?
You know, I would go, if we're going to stick a pin in the Cubs thing, you know, Jason Hayward specifically. I mean, I think like he's largely credited for being the guy in the locker room that turns around the end of that game after the rain delay.
Yeah,
and
right,
somebody who hasn't necessarily shown all the performance out on the field, but as somebody who, you know, in the movie they eventually make of this, which will, by the way, star Bradley Whitford as Joe Madden, because he's gone gray and has the same black glasses now, by the way.
Right, right.
You know, that will be the climactic moment of that film when Jason Hayward gives the, you know, Friday Night Lights type speech in the locker room and they go out there and they win the game.
There's something extremely, and we've kind of talked about that, the idea that someday, at somewhere, there will be a documentary that will say, you know, here's what was said in the locker room. Here, you know, the 30-year Buddy Ryan kind of moment where they're like talking about the 2016 Cubs and 2036, and they're like, then Hayward said, and then, you know, we find out exactly what he said in there. So it's interesting, I mean, because you think these are grown men, professional athletes, where pump-up motivational speeches don't necessarily do anything, especially when you're talking about guys that have played a full game already.
Right, but I mean, the whole idea of a team dynamic, this is a group that kind of came together in a particular way. They had left a lot of that nonsense of, you know, goats and curses and stuff behind, and there was a very clear sense that, you know, these guys all, you know, had a kind of bond, and to be able to, like, turn to somebody when you're like, oh, God, man, I don't really feel like going out there again, just be like, all right, look, you know, and get that.
Right.
It makes sense. I mean, I think, I don't know that a game like that is so much about dynamics and is so much about a feeling that you can't have somebody kind of take that moment, a moment when everybody's off the field, you have that moment to kind of talk to each other and say, all right, let's actually do this.
Yeah. Amy, what do you got for winners?
Well, you know, kind of on a similar note, I don't think I had this in my mind for a while, but I didn't really, really realize the powerful optimism of Joe Maddon until really this week. And he was talking about, I think after game two or game three, he was really, I was particularly struck by how he is unwilling to throw his guys under the bus. Like so many coaches are like, well, oh, well, you know, like we'll just kind of throw their guys under the bus. But he was he has almost this magical optimism and this like, I believe in my team so much in a way that I caught myself thinking, you know, to be a player on that team must be, you must feel so incredibly supported.
I mean, there's so many great stories about the Cubs, and one of which that popped out that I've never heard anybody talk about, but they talked about, and this was all surrounding the rain delay speech, that Joe Maddon doesn't like meetings.
Right.
That's what this was the article that came out. He doesn't usually call them, so when the players call him, he doesn't get involved in them. And Theo Epstein talked about it too. He's like, well, we have our pre-game strategy meeting. Where Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon and some of the coaches, they sit down about what they're going to try to do in this game. And they were talking about Kyle Hendricks, and there's a lot of hubbub around Joe Maddon, you know, making strange choices when it comes to pitching. Mm-hmm. Well, he says, well, we had this plan, and then Joe Maddon actually didn't go by the plan. Whatever the plan was, like Hendricks is going to go for four, then Lester's going to come in at the beginning of the inning. Like he didn't follow it. And I thought that was interesting. I'm like, oh, that Maddon just on his own changed it. And then they said in the same article that Theo Epstein at the end was in, you know, during the rain delay, he was in there strategizing that Jake Arrieta was going to be the pitcher when he came out, and Theo Epstein changed it, or Joe Maddon changed it. So I think it's interesting the dynamic between a coach and a general manager when you're doing strategy sessions, and the coach's like, nah. You know what is my game? Do my thing. I just think that I didn't know that that's how it played out, that a general manager even was in the room going, let's do this in the second inning.
Right.
I just thought, I've never heard that before. So it was interesting to hear that also that Joe Maddon just kind of brushed the kid to the side and Theo Epstein.
That kind of makes sense though, don't you think? I mean, you're just like, okay. Yeah. Like that was my Joe Maddon impression.
Go back to your office.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. I got this.
Thanks, Wonder Kid.
Yeah. I mean, he's almost got this, he feels like this almost sixth sense of like, just everybody just let me...
Everybody chill.
I've already envisioned this, please.
He's so relaxed. You just probably be like, hey, man, remember we said we were going to do that thing? Oh, that's right. You know, like you just feel like he's just so in the moment, so kind of present with what's happening.
Yeah. I also thought today that his speech at the actual rally, he said, don't believe what you read or what you see on TV. This is a game about players. The moves that managers make and general managers, we don't.
Yeah,
this is about players, and I think he was referring to all of the cottage industry that is, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking when it comes to baseball pitching moves and this, that, and the other. It's like, I mean, you just the day after Game 6 of the World Series, the amount of hot air that was used on pitching choices and things of that nature, and I think that was Joe Maddon's way of saying, you know what, people are making, you know, money off of, and the whole world, the sports media world, all that's bogus. All it comes down to is the players playing.
Yeah,
the game.
At the end of the day, here's somebody standing on a pitching mound throwing a ball.
Yeah.
And hitting a ball.
They're the ones that make or break the game.
And they're the ones who have to have, like, nerves of steel tell themselves, like, hey, this is the same thing you've been doing since you were a kid. Throw the ball, hit the ball, and run like hell.
And it is, one of the greatest in history. The greatest scenes will be Chris Bryant smiling as he goes to grab it. And it reminds you that it is a game.
Yeah.
It is a game, and this kid, and they're all kids. These are all under 27 years old. Right. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
You see him hugging and in the dugout. You know, I mean, there's like this familial thing that's there. And
all right, let's come back and do losers because we're out of time. We want to get to the news on time tonight with Rob. So let's come back. We'll do losers because I want to get past baseball. I said that at the beginning of this segment. We just got right back into baseball. But we got past it.
My bad.
I want to talk about some other stories this week, one of which is about the newspaper in this building and an offer that came off the table from Gannett. There's been a lot of dancing around whether or not the Chicago Tribune was going to be purchased or Trunk was going to be purchased. We'll talk about that coming up here. A reload the week that was. Amy Goose, Scott Smith in studio. Stay with us. Hey, Rob, it's Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with me, Scott Smith. You can catch him at Our Man in Chicago on Twitter. Also, our media contributor here at The Download, Amy Guth. a host here at 720 WGN, does Saturday Night Special as well as the Business Lunch on Saturdays, and she's also a filmmaker in town. Does a podcast as well with Rex Hupke.
Yeah, leading up to the election. And then we're going to, I think we're going to stretch it out and keep going until at least the inauguration. There's right. so much to talk about. There's really...
The water reclamation district needs to get its due.
Yeah, we got things to discuss. Yeah. So,
well, why don't we start there? You know what I would like to throw out for, we did winners, but I think for losers is anyone who watches TV right now.
Yeah.
The political cart or the political commercials, the advertising that is that decided to go local, not even the Trump and Clinton, because we don't really get that here because it's Illinois is a blue state. So they're not even fighting that. It is a $1 million campaign on both sides to essentially demonize Mike Madigan and demonize Donald Trump and anyone who's around either one of those guys. And it is painful. I mean, more than ever, it is painful. And it's because, I mean, I kind of made a joke at the top of the show that I have to turn off primetime TV for my kid.
Mm-hmm.
The topics that they choose to rail on either candidate are everything from rape to, you know, they're throwing the word incest around. There's sexual assault. There's late-term abortion. I mean, they have really gone after the hot-button items. What do you guys think of that? I mean, do you think this is more than it has been in the past?
Well, I think it's interesting because it's raised a lot of, at least parents I know, I don't have children myself, but a lot of parents that I know have been struggling with that of like, well, my kid has heard this. I have to, it's not on my schedule now. I have to have a conversation that I don't know that I'm ready to have, or I don't know that a 3.5-year-old is ready to have a conversation about what that means. And there like a lot of concern around how to talk to kids about these big things and also how to talk to them in a climate that we're in right now where such extreme behavior is quite normative and where we're, you know, it seems like quite permissive of such extreme and abusive behavior as just kind of the you know, the daily thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of parents I know are really struggling with that.
Yeah, I was the parent reader at my daughter's school for, she's a kindergartner. And at the end, we read some books, and then there was a point where the kids all got up and told jokes. And it was sort of like pretty much what you'd expect. There were a lot of variations on chickens crossing roads and that the banana orange knock-knock joke, that sort of thing. And at one point, some kid told a joke, and it was like, why did Donald Trump cross to the other side of the road? And it was like, because he was going to jail. Like, I was real nervous, though, before the punchline happened. Because I was like, I don't know. So I was like, and he's like, oh, I was like, okay, cool. And that ended well.
Wow.
But so like they have this, you know, idea of this person and there's what he represents and it's bullying and things like that. And it is I had that kind of conversation with my daughter. Like, do you know who Donald Trump is? And she's like, no. I was like, okay, cool. All right. So what are we grateful for today?
Right.
Like, you know, it's like I was able to kind of move on from that.
But I, you know, the commercials are done in such a way. And I mean, they're playing everywhere from cable TV to primetime.
It's coming into the comptroller's race.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
yeah, it's
Munger
absolutely.
Is getting hit because she hasn't said she's not voting for Trump. She hasn't said who she's voting
and for. And I don't know what it is. And there's something about it. And I feel it's disingenuous or somewhat inauthentic. And plays to the lowest common denominator to say, especially about Bruce Rauner, that Bruce Rauner is connected to Donald Trump. When we educated readers and people who've watched the news know that Bruce Rauner has gone out of his way to separate himself from Donald Trump. He's not. I mean, the Republican Party, what they've sort of done to try and tie that together, I feel plays. And then same on the other side with Mike Madigan. He wants to raise your taxes. He once voted for 33. Yeah, we know. And then you rolled that tax back, and that's where we're at.
Well, there's plenty of
so
reasons to dislike. You know, there's plenty of things to talk about, and it's not even so much always like I wish we'd talk about the issues, but there's so many things that you could discuss about Bruce Rauner and this sort of proxy fight he's having with Madigan that are, you know, he's pouring money into all these races, and the amount of money they're pouring into these races and what that money could go for instead, like things like that. And yeah, it all gets sort of wrapped up. There's no respite from.
What do you
Trump.
Think about the idea that both sides have decided that there is one character they're going to demonize? So the Republicans have gone after Mike Madigan. It doesn't matter who the candidate is. I kind of joked at the top. I don't know who's running for what.
Yeah.
I just know, you know, it's just like they're their name to Mike Madigan.
Yeah, you just know the through lines of this person is connected to this person.
And
therefore,
it's Trump versus Madigan.
Yeah,
and
it is.
I mean, how do you think, as we think about the political process and how we kind of work that out, that just seems to me like a strategy that to me is not working.
Well, if I'm going to put on my marketing hat for a second, you know, Mike Madigan has plenty of built-in brand awareness. You know, I mean, like, that's what they're looking for. They're looking to sort of have a very simple message that they can sell. And it saves you from having to explain things like, well, here's what a TIF district is and all those kinds of things. So you really just, if you're going to throw that kind of money at it, you throw it a message that you know works. And hey, I was sitting next to a guy in a bar. It was downtown. It was it's a Trader bar. It's, you know, and the guy was saying things that was just
right out of
like,
the commercial.
Right out of the commercial. Yeah, you know, you're sort of garden variety rubber stamp, like, well, you know, politics and the government is all. And,
yeah.
And it was on, it was like he had it about Obama. He had it about Democrats. And then he had it about, you know, he was upset, I think, about something that Donald Trump did. I think more of a tactical issue. But, like, you know, it was just. This was the guy who was had like sick and fed up.
Well, this is this election in particular, and this is a topic that keeps me up at night anyway. But this particular election has really driven that point home to me is about media literacy. I mean, we're talking about an election that is going to be largely decided on email forwards and sound bites. And here we are at a time when we have greater access to information than any other time ever in the history of ever. And yet we are, you know. An email that is written in Comic Sans in four different letters is like, well, that now it says this right here. Like, but like it doesn't, you know, I mean, I've received some from relatives and had been like, okay, anytime you receive an email forward, I need you to take that quote and Google it. Just pick a topic, like pick a piece of it and Google it and just do a little fact checking for yourself because most of them are complete pieces of crud.
I thought the same thing, and we'll talk about, you know, some of the stories about the rabbit hole and about Facebook news. I mean, obviously you go on Facebook and you can prove any point you ever want with a article from a biased source.
Certainly.
Now, I feel like there are friends of mine that I'm like, huh, like right off the way, I just look right at the URL.
Right.
And you're like, okay, that's not something that I know. When anything I see with a, you know, you just at a certain point, you go, okay, that's biased at its beginnings, you know. And I wonder, and it's kind of interesting to me because there are some credible sources this election season that have swayed closer to that the pendulum is swung. Like I think of the Washington Post, unbelievable place, done so much for journalism in this country. But Washington Post and that URL is starting to get to me going, well, they obviously don't like Trump.
Well, and I think the other thing is that so much of what's happened in this election cycle, there things like Twitter and social media have been weaponized in a way that they weren't before.
Truly.
And so the volume of a fake news story, when I was doing the news, there was Fox apologizing for talking about Hillary Clinton getting indicted, and they had reported that as an actual news story. Well, that was on a fake news site, and it had gotten so loud in social media that it started to get picked up by other news sites are like, well, is this real or not? And even some that are reputable feel like they have to jump into that fray and say, we're going to talk about why this isn't true. But even doing that gives it some kind of legitimacy. And the idea that mainstream media or just, you know, media sites in general have been so demonized that it's like, well, of course that's what they'd say. They'd say that is a fake news site because they're trying to hide the real
truth. I want to talk about Tronc at some point, and we will tonight, but I did think it interesting this week that the Chicago Tribune kind of had a media literacy issue with John Cass's column where he had called for Hillary Clinton to resign.
Right.
And then Breitbart and other right-wing sources of news said the Chicago Tribune is calling for Hillary Clinton to resign. Yeah. And there was even fight and infight between columnists who are like, that's editorial. That's not how they believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, there really is like you said, it almost becomes weaponized.
A similar thing happened when they endorsed Gary Johnson. You know, it was the newsroom, the editorial side felt like they were having to carry the weight for what was happening, you know, in the op-ed pages. So it's
lack of understanding about a lot of levels of newsroom, and it's our own fault in this industry for not being a little more transparent about how newsrooms work. Editorial boards are physically and emotionally and intellectually separate from the newsroom of the people doing the reporting. Within a newsroom, there are people doing the reporting, and that is, here are facts, I will convey them to you. Fact, gather, convey facts. Then there are columnists who are not only entitled to an opinion, but required to have a take on something. That is why they are writing a column. They're not
Absolutely
there to
right.
just report right. facts. And I think there's a lot of confusion about, you know, like lots of people at the treatment, like regularly you see them on social media being like, oh, you're not unbiased at all. Well, that person's not supposed to be. That person is a columnist. They're supposed
to
have a take.
That's right. They get paid for is have a take.
Right. And I think it's our own fault. I mean, it's easy to just say, oh, God, people are dumb. That's not it. It's our own fault for not being
I wonder
more
if social media
our,
plays a role
well,
in that because
absolutely.
It used to be page three, you knew where the column was.
Exactly.
Now you don't know.
Right.
Exactly.
Now you don't know.
From a stylistic perspective, if you saw the person's name in large letters, you saw their picture in there, you had a very clear sense that this is a column, this is attributed to this person, and I know the framing of it. But now a column looks like an article, looks like an op-ed.
And I wonder if that has something to do with my Washington Post or New York Times, because what's being attached is not necessarily their news report, their objective in their news reporting, but their columnists are taking a take.
Right. And you have these not reputable sites that are going to be very biased. They don't even have a byline on it. It'll just say like, you know, sometimes there's a couple of them that I've seen that have like a username. It'll be like Skaterboy123. Like, really, that guy is a credible journalist. Aces, guys, real good.
Skaterboy's got a good take.
I love that guy.
But when it sits in the feed, when people don't necessarily click through from Facebook, every story looks like everything else.
Everything
it's got a photo,
looks legitimate.
It's got a headline.
Right. Exactly.
I wonder if we're going to see a world in which that gets adjusted.
It's
I think
have
we
to.
Do. Yeah.
It
I think
already
we
has,
will.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a few things are going to happen. One thing I think is kind of further out on the horizon, but that's particularly interesting when we think about it in terms of media literacy, is I think more and more it's going to be less about the publication a journalist is attached to, and it's going to be that individual journalist's reputation and that, like, you're going to follow the journalist and their work more than you're going to follow I read this local paper. And we're already seeing that with people in that you hear about something happening, you hear water cooler talk, you go Google it, and the first, you know, right there in Google News, you're going to click on what's first or what's biggest or the thing you recognize. And it's not about like hometown brand loyalty. It's about the thing I'm going to click on right there.
And those weird news sites are now starting to pop up in Google results a lot more than they ever used to.
Which is concerning. And I do think there are plenty of credible and trained journalists who have gone independent and maintain their own sites and do fine work. And I do think it's a conversation we had early in the blogging world or in the blogging timeline. Like, everyone was like, well, how will you know what the difference is? There are journalists who blog. There's also a lot of not journalists who blog. And it's really important that we have a way to differentiate that because start with, if it ends with .blogspot, it may not be, but it might be. That's the thing, right? It might be a journalist.
We saw Facebook prioritize people's photos, people's status updates a lot more than brands and publishers. They just changed the algorithm to do that. And I thought that was really interesting. And the timing of it started when things had gotten to a real fever pitch in the political season.
Yes.
And it seems like if people are turned off, like you're saying you're tired of ads, people are going to get to a point again where they're like, I can't go through another season like 2016.
Yeah. Tired of Facebook.
I'm going to stop using Facebook.
They'll learn.
And that is going to turn people off enough where they're going to start to see a flattening out of those kinds of stories.
Scott Smith, Amy Guth, we're doing The Week That Was. We're breaking down the news. We'll come back. We'll do some overreported and underreported here on The Download. Stay with us. Talking, getting the jams going. Pete Zimmerman, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. It's a download. We're reloading this week's news with Scott Smith and Amy Guth in studio. All right, so overreported. You want to start there? You want to start, Scott? What do you got for overreported story of the week?
I mean, the Cubs. Can I say that? Can it still be the biggest standout? I mean, we won't go on. I mean, there was a story about Theo's twin brother, I think, at one point. I felt like that was... Right. Probably, I think the number of people, supposedly 3 million to 5 million
this
people
is,
being
I think
downtown,
this is really
overreported
I think
and
it,
underreported
I think
at the same time.
It may be wrong in the sense that, you know, it's more people have reached out. You know, even tonight, even on, as I said at the beginning of the show, I'm like 5 million people, seventh biggest. You know, like to have 5 million people in one area, this is, you know, people are showing, it's even on Twitter. Like,
even if it's there's 2.7 million people in the city of Chicago. Like, that's, you know, understanding that a lot of people came in from the suburbs.
Still,
how are you going to have that many people in the down, and I mean the full downtown area?
I have a feeling that they'll put out the official, and they're like, it's great, guys, 275,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Fox 32 had a headline that said, Cubs World Series celebration ranks as seventh largest gathering in human history.
I know. You were, Justin, you were talking about, we beat Rod Stewart.
Rod Stewart show in Brazil.
What period, though? This, like,
this,
was
a, this would have been a 90s show.
90, oh, a 90s show.
That was
when
he was like in the romance era.
Right,
and it was
right.
Downtown Train
right.
and all those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was singing with the Isley Brother. This old heart of mine been broke a thousand.
That
Brazil,
was like,
you can get it.
Together.
You can right, you can see it. It's yeah. a soccer stadium, you know. He's sitting there, you know.
It was after spandex. He had the right, suits, by right, then, but he right. had really big hair.
Right. Yeah. But you can say, and I also think that overreported, and it's been going on not just this week, has been the relationship between the Cubs and the White Sox in terms of the, you know, the bar that always puts up the things that are you right. know, nasty about the Cubs.
Right.
And then there's just this jump to the idea that every Sox fan feels that way. I mean, I think Sox fans have been extremely respectful for the nonstop sort of Cubs flow of media for the last three months at this point.
I only know one Sox fan who was like, okay, I'm over this. I don't want to see this. And it came from, hey, it wasn't, by the way, it wasn't the only victory this city's seen, 2005. Yeah. What's up?
Sox fans got upset when that erasure was happening, you know, when ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I did not
you
like
know,
that one bit.
Different TV stations or, you know, national TV
we're
networks.
We're forgetting that the White
Sox. Chicago,
right.
finally. We're like, well, no, wait, hang on.
Because Sox fans are used to being forgotten about, right,
yes,
in the city,
yes.
right? Like, we're used to the Cubs being the big story. And so we're just like, okay, that's fine. But then when you're like, you're going to take away our World Series, we're going to get a little upset with you.
yeah.
Like, come on.
Hold All right, up, hold
what,
up.
What do you got for overreported, Amy?
Well, I think the Alderman Cubs tickets thing. I was
right.
I was really over that.
That was terrible. That was just so.
Yeah.
Ugh. Like, we don't really. I mean, that's essentially almost the perfect overreported story because you're like, you know what? You guys, what do you even. At a certain point, I think they kept talking so much that they were like, I don't know why
you don't
I'm talking
anymore.
I
don't even know what you're saying anymore.
I feel like an idiot.
Tickets are things. People buy them and go to things. Like, you don't even know what you're saying. You're just saying the things.
There's a point where I think all of them are like, just shh.
Yeah.
Stop talking.
I'm not going to say this was overreported because it is, in fact, newsworthy. I think the I don't even know how to say this without saying, like, the biggest jerk in the world. Okay, so the Taco Bell post, right? Mm-hmm. The Taco Bell at Clark and Addison was that Taco Bell sign got taken away at one point during the excitement. And I don't think it was overreported because certainly you need to report that because there was, you know, yeah, that's right. dangerous. But nonetheless, it was like it was said by more than one outlet in a way that you would say, and Lake Michigan is forever empty. Like
right.
People said it like
this isn't you need to know this.
It was like, and the Taco Bell sign has been moved. Like this, it's a Taco Bell, you guys.
Yeah,
like,
it's not a landmark.
I feel bad for the manager who has to do it. Right. It's not a landmark. Right. The Alamo has
Some
not been
argue.
Burned to the ground.
But there was a lot of reporting around that Taco Bell because there was a story about how the kind of prep work that was going into the Taco Bell preparing
for
the World Series.
There was so much about the Taco Bell. And
like,
it was
well,
the
you know,
same way that you would be like,
we're getting up early and we're chopping food. It's like, you don't say.
The same way that you would say, like, lots of mint was prepared for the Kentucky Derby, or lots of Chicago dogs were prepared by this iconic hot dog place.
Do you think it's possible that they're surrogates because there's been so much change in Wrigleyville in 6 months? So the McDonald's is gone, all the places are gone.
They're
like,
Taco
Bell! A Taco Bell just takes on all of the history of Wrigleyville.
There was a story that came out, again, there were a lot of food related stories in this World Series about how there were people who were trying to entertain business clients and using, you know, Cubs game as a peg. And with all the changes that they're making, there aren't enough fine dining restaurants in the Wrigleyville area. Yeah. And I was like, y'all are building a hotel there. Put some of that stuff in
they're
there.
They're going to. They will.
Like, that's where that
we're
stuff
seeing
goes.
We're seeing an interesting time in Wrigleyville, which I will say is my overreported story. Wrigleyville.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
I don't want to hear about Wrigleyville
at least
until April.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? We're done with Wrigleyville. Amy Guth, Scott Smith in studio. We'll come back. We'll do some underreported stories and also get to what story sucked you down the rabbit hole this week. It's the week that was here in the download. Stay with us.
Outstanding.
Pete Zimmerman's on fire. He's all jacked up from the parade today.
I'm feeling this, man.
He's good. He's got a little Rod Stewart for us. It's Download 720 WGN. We're breaking down the week that was, reloading the week with Amy Guth and Scott Smith. All right, so we've done a lot of categories. Let's keep up. Let's do underreported stories. Amy, what was your underreported story of the week?
You know, I feel like it's hard to say what was underreported because there's just so much overblown. It's like hard to even think about. The one I hope we talk about a little more is a fairly new story, and that is about Kane delivering the speech in Spanish. I think that is really interesting. That's history making. That's not something a candidate has done before.
It's not just one line.
No, he did it and he did it confidently. It wasn't like awkward white guy Spanish. Like he like clearly has a confident command of the language. And, you know, I thought it was funny to hear Trump being called a clown in Spanish.
I also say that there's another story that I read as well about the Latino vote in Florida being astronomically for Hillary Clinton, something like 90%.
Right.
A strange number that a lot of pundits are saying could actually be a nationwide number, that they're only polling that in Florida. It could be everywhere, that Donald Trump has done so much to alienate the Latino vote, and and it's going to play a role in this election.
And I think this points at something larger, right? We talk about, like, the woman vote, the Latino vote, the black vote. Like, that's not a thing. That's really, you cannot categorize an entire group of people around one belief system. You just can't do that. And so there are nuances to any group, and there are subgroups of every group, and you just can't.
Right.
And I think that's really problematic to talk when we talk about, like, a Latino vote or a black vote. That's just not, that's not a one united thing.
It's a category for polls.
It's a category for polls, and that's it. But I think it becomes part of the narrative where we think about a peoplehood all believing and thinking the same things.
Right.
And I think in that way, it's very problematic that it continues to be language attached to a poll.
Welcome to Chicago. That's how they've been doing it since Royko's boss, right? Voting blocks and ethnicities. What do you got for underreported story, Scott Smith?
So I think it's sort of a combination of underreported and poorly reported, which was this birth control for men story.
Oh, that is so interesting.
So there was a study, it was done back in 2011. This was not a recent thing. And the sort of too long didn't read version of the story was that men were experiencing side effects from taking birth control. And so they stopped taking it because men are wusses and can't handle the same side effects that women handle when they are taking birth control. But BuzzFeed dug into it, and they found that 75% of the men in the study actually said that they were okay continuing to take the birth control despite some of the side effects, which were pretty significant. Injection site pain, inability to return to full fertility after taking the drugs, depression, irregular heartbeat, things that were, about 60% of the people involved in the study had some of those side effects and were pretty significant over and above the kinds of side effects you take when you know women take
birth
control.
But they were willing to move forward.
But they were willing to move forward for it, but the scientists felt like the study and the drug was unsafe, and it was introducing side effects that were unintended and over and above what they should have had. And so the scientists were actually the ones that discontinued the study.
So this is really a media narrative where the narrative is guys can't handle it as opposed to the facts of the story.
Right. It is a couple of narratives. I think there's a media narrative that of like, because the headline you saw on a lot of sites, it was splashy, was like male birth control creates side effects that women have been dealing with all along without complaint.
Right.
And that was kind of that. But then there's a subbeat of that, and that is a lot of women I know and a lot of women I follow on social media were sharing that story with very much an eye roll, very much a like, you know what? Welcome to being a woman. That's a thing that happened. Like, I think women were pushing it even further and dismissing the crap out of that story because it was just like, I heard so many women going like, I can't even go here. I can't even think of this. And then it introduced a second piece of women really talking about what that meant for a man to be on birth control. It's like at the end of the day, if your birth control fails, like it ain't on you as much as it's on me. I'm going to suffer a bigger consequence
and
than that.
There were women I knew who were like saying, you know, so if a guy told you he was taking that kind of birth control, would you believe him? I mean, there were so many.
So it really got into
things.
The other.
It really did. It really opened a lot of conversation. I know women in committed relationships that said that have complete trust of their partner, but even then they were like, I don't know that I would want to entrust that to him.
You know what I was bummed out about that, and I'm not blaming or saying, I'm going to say this, the dismissal of, yes, we know all about those side effects. Those happened to us. It was the problem with this being underreported is that we didn't get to have a conversation about why is it okay for us to have all these side effects associated with women taking birth control? Mm-hmm. Why are we not talking about the 10% of women who experience depression when they're on certain kinds of birth control? And it's very significant. And you don't necessarily realize that it's because of the type of birth control you're taking that this is happening. And so there were all these different things we could have talked about around some of the side effects that happen around birth control that because it was like, because the narrative was, oh, well, yes, welcome to the club. This is what happens. it shouldn't be that's just what happens. We should be having a bigger conversation about that and the responsibility of men and women to preventing unwanted, you know, pregnancy. And that was a conversation that we totally lost because of the way that the story was reported.
Agreed. And I think that we also made that conversation unbelievably insulated within male groups and female groups. I saw very few men and women having that conversation. So I saw a lot of people speaking on behalf of a partner and saying, I wouldn't, or I would, I, you know, and trying to be, have some degree of empathy for a partner. But at the end of the day, I did not see men invited into conversations where women were dismissing and saying, oh, well, welcome to it. Nor did I see men saying, I don't think I realized it. I don't think I knew those side effects. I feel badly now that my female partner has been on the pill for all these years. So, you know, I saw those conversations happening, but I did not see them happening.
And
in
it's
a
so
co-ed
interesting
way.
Because the eye roll really comes from the way that that story kind of the headline and the reporting of it. Right. I mean, that's where, I mean, I think that there is some validity in the eye roll based on the idea that the headline was men can't handle it.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Scott Smith, Amy Guth in studio with me right now. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. All right, so we'll take a break. We'll come back and let's talk rabbit holes. Sound good? Sound good? I did not think I read it this way, but the Amy is from Dallas. She's like, "Why put down Dallas?"
I'm from Fort Worth.
I don't
seem like you were mocking.
No, the stars. They're I don't like the stars. I have nothing against Dallas.
I like how this suddenly became us workshopping your live reads. Like, that's what we do.
Scott Smith, Amy Guth in studio. We're breaking down the week that was. All right, so for this category, it's the rabbit hole. Which story really took you down the rabbit hole? What story were you like, oh, I'll check this out on social media? And then you're like, I didn't know that. And you start bouncing from another one and finding your way and essentially being a scholar on the subject.
Yeah.
We'll start with you, Scott. What do you got for a rabbit hole story?
The 17-year-olds out of Macedonia who have apparently found a nice little market for themselves in plagiarizing and creating fake news stories about Trump. And there have been multiple stories of this kind of nature where people have realized that politics is a field you can mine in social media for clicks and then for some, you know, cheap advertising dollars off of that. There was a story even last week that was talking all about Facebook has now turned its trending news box over to an algorithm. And so there's all kinds of fake news coming in through there. We were talking about this a little bit in a previous segment.
I hate that. Yeah.
Even the New York Times did a story about Outbrain and Taboola, which are these boxes you see on the bottom of news stories like from the web and other stories you might enjoy. And publishers do that because every time somebody clicks on that, they get a little bit of revenue. And there's a lot of, you know, fake-ish kind of stuff, either from the photos that are, you know, everybody's seen. They're like, you'll never believe what this child star looks like now. And
right,
it's like,
right.
No, I know that. That's the kid from Stranger Things or whatever, you know. And so there's all this, like, fake news garbage. And I get thrown down the rabbit hole with that because you just start to, you know, peel back the layers and realize, right. And it's apparently 17-year-olds in Macedonia. And they've said they tried doing Bernie Sanders related content. It didn't pay as well. They realized that the spigot is about to be turned off because the election's about to happen. And they're specifically targeting U.S. users because they're worth more. And they realize they're going to start doing sports now.
Right.
Because that's apparently where the money is.
And you know what? It's so true.
Yeah.
They throw up a story about Jay Cutler, and I'm going to be clicking through being like, Jay does what? Smoke a Jay? And I'll be like, oh, this is fake. All right, Amy, what do you got for rabbit hole?
Well, so this is a complicated rabbit hole because it was exactly the path of where you start and then where you land. And suddenly you're like, why am I on Wikipedia for jelly beans? Oh, right. I was looking up this one guy. Or, you know, like the weirdest thing will happen. But it started with, I saw a story about a new study done linking daylight savings and depression about how each twice a year there'll be an uptick
this week
because like regularity of sleep and circadian rhythms are very linked to depression. And, you know, this is a city with a long, tough winter. And I think a lot of us struggle through it. Like by February, like it's rough, right? It's hard to be cheery. And then those first sunny days, everybody's very cheery. So that's where I started with it. And I then kind of got into this whole, a lot of stories about how the election is putting people in a certain mindset where, like, we're all really keyed up and we're all really just like, just get it over with already, right? Like, emotions are so high around this election that it was about that led to one offshoot of the rabbit hole about, like, journalists and this particular election reflecting on past elections of, like, yeah, by Halloween we were tired, but it was still fun. This year I might need therapy when it's done, like, or an armed guard, or,
you know,
that kind of feel, which then led to retailers reporting they believe that their sales are lower because no one wants to make a decision leading up to the election. Particularly of interest was the jeweler, Jared. They were saying no one's buying engagement rings right now because, and when, like, informally polling customers, they were like, I don't want to make a major life decision until I know what's happening.
Yeah, so like election fatigue in a way.
It's election
like affecting
fatigue
everywhere. Yeah, because Susie was on Road talking about the same thing, that like the markets are in a hiatus.
Weird,
they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
And that's not good. There's no fluctuation right now until they know exactly what's going to happen.
I think the FBI coming out on last Friday and, you know, having this sort of like vague thing, yeah, you know, that was like the ultimate. We literally don't know what's going to happen next. And even when it does, we don't even know what to do with that information.
Yeah.
So you have this sort of Damocles thing happening,
yeah,
but it's so empty. I felt that all week. There was this weird, like, thing of, I'm not sure what is going to happen here. And I think that's, you know, combine that with the Cubs, and it was like, yeah, everything is off. The Cubs,
yeah,
are winning a World Series. This weird thing is happening.
The Cubs helped in that regard, because we didn't have to think about it. Because the one thing that I always think about, and then I say, oh, this, why did I even think about that, is none of this is going to stop.
Far too much money
has been made off of clicks on social media and the election, that whoever wins on Tuesday is going to have the same amount of media scrutiny, the same amount of foot in mouth, the same amount of FBI chasing, the same amount of political rivals trying to one up. It's not going to stop, and it's going to and when you think about the year from now, that automatically makes me not want to buy it. Any jewelry from Jared.
Right. Well, and I think it's interesting that we have kind of have this mental block, like there's a cliff we're all going to fall off. Like,
right,
after November, you know, after the election day, it's like going to be, beyond that is here there be dragons. Like, there's just nothing after that, right?
Yeah,
but
right,
in fact, it's not going. There's not going to be this sudden certainty. One piece of the puzzle will be revealed.
There never has been, right?
Right. But there's never like a really solidly, there's not going to be any like solid resolution. There will be to that particular race, but like the things that this election has unearthed, they're not going
to
go away.
You still have to remember that guy you stopped working with two jobs ago is like a super Bernie bro. You know, you have to like just live with that. And
the question I have is, do I have to go through Facebook and follow back, like, after it's over and be like, okay, now I'm going to follow the people that I unfollowed for election time?
Well, I think that'll be interesting. Like, I know a lot of families that are people that are saying, like, I had to mute all my family members. Mm-hmm. It's too much. I love them and I don't want to kill them right now. So it'll be interesting. I think families need to heal a little bit.
Right.
And I think
Thanksgiving's coming up, so I'm sure everything will be fine.
Oh, it's going to be the worst Thanksgiving. Yeah. It's going to be the weirdest Thanksgiving in the world. We need to hug it out.
All right. Yeah. My rabbit hole, which is one that is I'm offering this rabbit hole up to amateur investigative reporters. This is one I have not had the time to do. But when there was all this brouhaha over the honorary street sign for Donald Trump, right over by the Trump Tower here in Streeterville, aldermen kind of said, we're taking this sign away. There also was a story that Rahm Emanuel was not going to give back the donation that Donald Trump gave him for his 2011 mayoral candidates or race for mayor, which begs the question, why is Donald Trump giving money to Rahm Emanuel? Seems like a very strange bedfellows when you think about the idea of where Donald Trump is now and what he represents and what he's running on, what platform. Why in God's green earth would he give money to someone who was in Hillary Clinton's campaign, who has been Hillary Clinton's partner essentially for years? So you look at that, you say, okay, well, that's interesting, right? I guess he's a businessman. And the DNA info story about the honorary street sign, they talked to former alderman, 42nd Ward alderman, Bert Nateris. And Bert Nateris, a long time, he's been retired for a while, but he was the alderman here for the honorary street sign. He said, his quote, which is, I had to read back because I'm like, what? He said, Donald Trump was, he used to not be like this. That was his first thing. He was not, when we knew him back in 2011 or 2010, he was not like this.
Fact check, false.
Right, exactly. But then he goes on to say, he was such a nice man when I went to Mar-a-Lago for a reception with him. And I'm like, why is a 42nd Ward alderman going to a Florida golf course to hang out with Donald Trump, the same Donald Trump who's building this building along the river, who has a huge name? There was this big, remember this story about the Trump sign that he put on, and that wasn't part of the deal, but then the aldermen were like, hands are tied, nothing we can do, nothing. Yeah. I mean, it's his building. There's something in there where there's a lot of money that has changed
hands.
Justin,
are you saying people with access to power and money hang out with each other?
All I am
or
saying,
might abuse that
all
power?
I am saying is Come that on. I'm Someone not sure what the relationship between Donald Trump and the Chicago political machine is. I mean, now you see him sort of bad-mouthing in debates. I think there's a story in there about what their relationship has been in the past. Mm-hmm. I want to see some more transparency about what came about and what was. There's a great story Lee Bay tells. I'll let him tell it at some point about Mayor Daley and Donald Trump. But there's something about the alderman, Donald Trump, Rahm Emanuel, that just doesn't add up, and I'd like to know more. So for amateur investigative reporters, I give you that lead.
Great.
Yeah, Amy Goose, Scott Smith in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll get the news. If you guys can stick around, we'll do one more segment about what story we're going to remember 50, 100, 500 years. That's not the Cubs. Gotcha. Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're breaking down the week that was here on the Download with Scott Smith, Amy Goose.
It's like a Download after dark.
Yeah, that's right. After 9:30, we slow it down.
Some good jams on this show.
It gets real Jefferson Airplane up in here. That's all Pete. All right, so let's talk about our last category tonight. This is the category of what story will be remembered in 50, 100, 500 years from now. This is a category that really makes people think. When my panelists come on, they're like, what am I going to say? What's really going to remember? What are we going to remember, recall from this week? This week is kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, it was kind of a gimme, right?
Right.
I mean, I would like this to be 50 years from now. This is the year that Chicago shed its, you know, second city status. The lovable losers thing was largely a myth, particularly in the last 20 years, because the city's embraced the Cubs so much. And it would be nice for us to think about how it is okay. We can have nice things. You know, we don't have to. A friend of mine was posting on Facebook. He's like, you know, can we talk about how even when Chicago wins, we got to talk about how we lost? Like you were saying, you know, all the talk about Aroldis Chapman and what it, you know, and Madden's pitching efforts and, or, you know, his choices and stuff. The idea that, you know, we don't actually have to have a government that has corruption in it. We don't have to have neighborhoods that are bad in order for us to have ones that are good. We can have a baseball team that's a baseball team that wins and wins regularly and actually shows up in the playoffs on a regular basis. And we don't have to like embrace the poor us loserdom aspect of Chicago. That's some of its worst.
A friend of mine put this on Facebook when the Cubs won. And I thought this was so interesting. I never thought about this way, but the Cubs taught us that it's that you can lose and still be loved.
Sure, that's
I thought
great.
That was kind of embrace interesting. I also think that, like, you know, sports is all about winning, and you know, I as a Sox fan am one that will buy into the idea if you don't put a good product on the field, I'm not coming to the game.
Right.
But there is something about Chicago Cubdom and what the Cubs bring to sport that almost goes against the grain. This idea that you don't have to win; it's okay not to win. We still love you.
Sometimes we're going to tear up an airport in the middle of the night. It's just what happens here.
It's just what we do. I mean, you know, things happen. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, I heard someone say something similar, and it was this idea of little kids right now kind of having that consciousness and not making it to the point of being an adult where you already believe they're a not winning team. Like if you're little enough but old enough to remember this, but still little enough to not have all that baggage of that scarcity kind of mm-hmm. mindset, that it will be interesting to grow up with this idea of possibility in a way, you know, around sports.
Yeah, if you're an older teenager, you might have some memories of the White Sox winning the World Series and the Cubs winning the World Series.
Right.
Like that's and the Blackhawks.
Right.
And, well, maybe not the Bears. But, you know, right. You've got all of this, you know, you've got a sports championship city, you know, for the
most You have possibility. Right. You have, you know, this like a greater sense of hope than someone who's maybe a little bit older
right.
who saw like a not winning
This
streak.
Idea that this team said we're not going to be burdened by goats and curses
right.
and you know, guys you know, grabbing the ball, you know, out of play. That's not going to be a part of our narrative and we're going to create our own is something that would be 50 years from now, be nice for people to point to this year and be like, and that's the year we stopped doing that.
There you go. That's yeah. well said. I mean, the concept of the 5,100, 500 years, I mean, when you think about what it means, I mean, from a Chicago standpoint, I think it'll be the week that the Cubs won the World Series. But I think from the I think from a purely sport standpoint, I think people will remember Game 7 of the 2016 World Series. If you're not a Cubs fan and you're not an Indians fan, you did see something that doesn't normally happen, a very competitive, very intense Game 7 of a World Series.
I'm a Sox fan. I'm not even that into sports, and I got super caught up in it. I mean, I finished a bottle of bourbon. It was very stressful.
It all started this week, too, if you think about it. It all started with last weekend, a World Series, just complete domination of a World Series weekend at Wrigley Field. One of the things that also came out, which I think is very interesting, is how much money this all cost. The idea of like being able to excise these demons and be able to be there to honor your past and your family's past is going to cost you $4,000 a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little weird. What do you got for the story? Now, you said in the break, maybe Cubs not the story of the week?
No, I think Cubs is the story of the week. No, I think it is. And I think it's the underlying narratives under it, right? Those I'm going to say that again without saying under twice. The underlying narratives there with it, that that it's about winning, that it's about hope, that it's about all these other things. And, you know, like you said, Scott, if you're an older teenager, you can have a memory of a Blackhawks Stanley Cup and a White Sox, you know, and a Cubs both having a World Series win. And I think that's just an interesting thing, because if you think about the fire narrative that we are so attached to in this town, it is not about the events leading up to the fire. Mm-hmm. And gosh darn it, it took us so long to get to that fire.
Right.
It's about the Chicago story very often starts with the fire and the rebuilding and we built this on top of rubble. And we, you know, that's where Chicago, even though we were around long before the fire, that's where we often start that story. And I think that we need to remember that and go forward accordingly, because it's really about like bigger metaphors that were unearthed as a result of this World Series.
So maybe this week what will be remembered is metaphors.
Yeah. Or similes.
And
who knows?
And
there might be some like or as.
Idiom.
The Cubs winning World Series is like.
And let's be
Chicago
real. I think that this week is the information we don't have this week is what's memorable. Mm. It is the week before we know something very big about the next president of the United States, and that's who it's going to be.
Right.
And it's been, you know, a lot of people are suddenly feeling, people that were feeling very confident about one candidate are suddenly not as confident, feeling like polls are doing this and polls are doing that. And, you know, polls are like, just focus, everybody. We're almost there.
You know, for you, as we look forward, as we say the week is ending, and that includes the weekend, do you figure in any more sort of surprise moments, gotchas, scandals,
totally.
Things that might happen before Tuesday?
We are far from rock bottom here.
At this point, I'm not going to curse this by saying what else, but, you're sort of expecting Monday something's going to happen. I mean, we just had this injunction against Trump and Roger Stone because the judge in Ohio said that they were essentially, through their rhetoric, disenfranchising voters by saying, go down there and watch people. So, I mean, this has just happened today. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that we're going to see some more stuff like that coming out on Monday. And yeah, so, you know, hunker down. You know, you got a couple more days. I'm just going to work in the yard. I'm just going to go rake the leaves. I can't. I got to have nature.
In the gutters if you're
rake the leaves.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's going to be a really interesting time. I think the possibility of much more going. We have a lot that's stirred up. Emotions are really high right now because everybody's just kind of got this sense of fatigue. And everybody's just kind of like, let's just find out. Let's just do this. And we're at a time when we're not talking. We're not, the conversations we're having are not about let's create space to have a conversation, even though we know we don't agree with each other. We're all about a big tug of war game. No, yeah. I'm right. I'm right. I'm right. And it's wearing people out. And
do
I think when we're in that state, you know, people, you know, that's when irrationality can occur in erratic behavior.
Do you think that after the election, it's going to be easier to create that space for that conversation? Or do you still think it's going to be too pitched?
I think it's going to be too pitched. I think it needs a cooling off period. It needs to go to timeout. Everybody needs to go to timeout. We need to hug it out. No, I think we need...
in time for Thanksgiving, right?
Oh, I don't think we're... I think it might be a couple of years, if not longer.
Wow.
I think we've unearthed a lot of things that ultimately are going to be better for having been unearthed. right? We've brought up a lot of big issues in, with this election cycle. We're talking about sexism and racism and xenophobia and big things that we haven't talked about in this powerful or mainstream of a way in a very long time. So I think ultimately it's going to be good, but I don't think we're on the upswing yet. I think we're still on the downswing. I think there's more to go before we get there.
Amy Guth at WGN Radio. You can hear it at the Saturday Night Special as well as the Business Lunch on Saturdays. Also her podcast with Rex Hupke from the Chicago Tribune. She's also a filmmaker. Scott Smith, who's our media contributor here at The Download. You can also follow him on Twitter at Our Man in Chicago. Both breaking down the week that was, reloading this week's news. Amy, Scott, thanks for being here, guys.
Good to be here.